An animated book opens and a city block rises from its blank pages. A low view moves down a main street, settling outside a movie theater. Illuminated by blinking lights, the marquee reads, Amazon Studios. Over a grainy black television screen, a logo appears, GED Media. Titles appear. Amazon Studios presents. A GED Media production. The TV switches on. Pale sound waves illuminate the screen. They dip and rise with the music. In a 1950s-style home, a black-and-white TV set plays the opening of a show. Glimpses of mysterious imagery float through a starry sky.
You were entering a realm between clandestine and forgotten, a slipstream caught between channels, the secret museum of mankind, the private library of shadows, all taking place on a stage forged from mystery and found only on a frequency caught between logic and myth. You were entering Paradox Theater.
A title appears.
Tonight's episode, The Vast of Night.
An encroaching view slowly moves into the TV screen. A town sign reads, Cayuga City Limit, New Mexico. Exiting his house, a man dons a hat and coat.
Just me. Patricia's with the kids over in Hobbs.
Hobbs, huh? Good thing we're not playing them.
Boy, ain't that right. See you at the game.
The image colorizes. Outside a high school gym, a round-faced teen takes a large tape recorder from a bespectacled young man. They head inside.
I don't want to have to light my next cigarette, Benny. I got one right here that'll do the trick.
McBroom's looking for you.
Why?
I'm not sure why. I was at supper.
Ingrid's sister was just giving you a tap about her.
No, she wasn't.
Oh, yes, she was, in her car with Millie right while I was walking up.
A light flickers.
Great damn dogs. What was that?
I think that's why they were calling.
Well, make me feel better, Benny. Make me feel better. This is not good.
Arlo's under the stands figuring it out, because last time it happened, it was a squirrel that had bitten through a wire, but the wire was still in the squirrel's mouth of the skeleton.
So just the lights are already electric, because we can't roll if it's flickering.
I don't know. I was at supper.
Hey, how many times do you want to tell me you're at supper, Benny?
Another teen approaches.
Sam, what's Spartan Buzz's buzz, man?
I don't know, it's just blinking in there.
All right, well, let's plug it in.
Well, I haven't had anything to test it.
Then let's figure it out. Come on, plug it in.
Okay.
Sam takes the recorder.
Hey, be careful, because if it electrocutes you, you'll stop growing hair in your body and never get another date.
Oh, tune out, man. Go find Mrs. McBroom.
I will, but I don't like that tone, Sam. Hey, and if it's still blinking when you start recording, stop recording, or I'll have one of them Buell brothers come beat the water out of you.
Everett. Yeah, right. Hey, Mrs. McBroom is looking for you.
Rennie, up in the stands with his horn. I know, Benny told me. Sorry, what does she want?
I don't know. She's just walking around asking everybody, where's Everett? Have you seen Everett? When's Everett getting here?
Well, I tell me nothing. Rennie, go sit back down with your horn. Okay. Matter of fact, give it to me. There's something wrong with it. I used to play trombone.
Everett! Okay. Can I bring you my tape recorder so you can show me how it works?
I don't know what you just said, but you sound like a mouse being eaten by a possum. Rennie, give me your horn.
I said, can I bring you my tape recorder so you can show me how it works?
Yeah, sure. Hey, Rennie,
wait!
Yeah.
Why?
Drop it down now, Rennie.
You can't hurt it.
Oh, well, what am I going to do, Rennie? What am I going to do? Drop it down now. Come on.
Rennie gives Everett his trombone.
Hey, where are you going?
All right, Rennie.
An older Rennie approaches.
Everett Arlo told me to bring you down.
Why? Where is he? What for? Down where?
He's in the locker. I don't know what he wants. They don't tell me anything. They don't listen to me. He just said, go grab Everett.
All right, well, I don't know what's going on. I just got here. I'm not going to be able to help. I got HH at 7, so...
I know that. He just doesn't listen to me. Come tell him for yourself. I told them to turn the power off during the tornado, but they don't listen to me. Last time this happened, it was a squirrel that had bitten through the wire. Squirrel still had the wire in his mouth.
Yeah, man.
And we had a rat gnaw through the scoreboard wire. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Uh-huh. And an owl made his home in the library attic, so we had all these critter bones laying around the crawl space.
Where they joined three men by an electrical panel.
Helen Trank had a bat skull in her pocket.
Oh, man.
Why are you...
Wait. I did that.
Arlo, get out now!
Hold it. What's Everett doing here?
You told me to bring him down here.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I did not.
You told me to bring him down here.
Emmett down here, not Everett. Emmett.
I asked you specifically if you wanted Everett from the radio.
Emmett doesn't work at the radio station?
No, Everett works at the radio.
Arlo, if you don't need me, I'm going to get back out.
Did Emmett never work at the radio?
No, it's just me. Emmett works at Santa Mira Mills. He's an electrician.
Now, hold on just a minute. Emmett worked at the radio.
Everett rejoins Benny in the gym.
Wait.
Do you want us to record over that last game? And Rennie wants his horn back.
No, he does. That's why I took it.
Did you get the reel? Because
every game just use the same reel. It's in the back of the recorder. I'll show you.
Are you going to get Rennie his horn back?
If it stops being bad news for my gym. I mean, someone's got to spank his ass.
Oh, staying there right now?
Yeah, is that okay?
Can you walk?
Yeah.
And stick, we'll walk. Just let me look at this for him.
Found it. So we just used the same reel as last time.
Yeah, same reel each game.
But that's going to cause some crosstalk eventually. Right? I mean, won't it?
Read the Bible, Sam.
Yes.
There's your answer.
The answer to what?
Answer to everything.
But
Yeah. Eventually crosstalk. Yeah, but no one's gonna buy a new tape for every game. Look, if it's a problem, I'll ask Mr. McKean. Maybe he'll buy you guys some new ones, but it's not gonna make a difference right now. All right, if the power goes out, you stop recording, because I'm not buying another one of those from Mr. McKean.
Faye follows Everett.
All right, where's the tail, Nightingale?
What's all the fuss? Why you got Rennie's horn?
Whoa, what's this? I don't know you're in band. Why aren't you up there playing?
Oh, I can't do pet band. I work the game so Ruth can watch him since Greg made varsity. Why do you have Rennie's horn?
He needs to be punished for being a Rennie. Wait, you're working? What about the Rita Culp or Winifred?
Oh, Winifred works nights in San Mirlin. Rita Culp quit. She works at Deb's now.
Okay, so clue me in about this lunchbox. This is the Wesson house?
Yeah, it's the one you told me to get.
All right, where'd you get it?
Montgomery Ward catalog.
All right, play me something. What have you recorded?
Well, nothing yet. I mean, I didn't want to mess anything up.
So you haven't recorded anything?
No, I didn't want to mess something up.
Whoa, you have a brand new tape recorder? You haven't been curious enough to push a button?
I've been so curious. Whoa. I just didn't want to. I'm nervous.
Are the batteries in it?
Yes.
All right, then press record. Pull out the mic. On the side, are the wheel spinner?
Yes.
All right, then talk.
What do I say?
All right, try to just raise your right hand. Okay, I'm not now, nor have I ever been a member of the Communist Party.
I'm not now, nor have I ever been a member of the Communist Party.
Around Dodge City, in the territory out west.
There's only one way to handle the spoilers and the killers, and that's with the U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Brought to you by L&M Filters.
Well, that's good. You want to hear it?
Yes.
All right, okay.
Everett takes the player. A car drives past.
Hey, coyote! Oh!
Yeah, you guys know me. I'm Everett. I like those guys.
He rewinds the deck.
This is Faye Crocker.
Is that recording now?
No, I know. Just, I've never held a microphone before. I'm practicing.
Well, I did not tell you to practice. Please shut up.
I'm not shutting up. It's my recorder.
Oh, look out. That was good. That's how you gotta be when we're recording. That was Queen of Cayuga. You 500 watt Faye.
This is Faye Crocker. I have never up until now held a microphone.
Only one way to handle the spoilers and the killers.
Isn't that a charge?
That's a large charge.
Come on, press record.
Is that really how it sounds?
Yeah, that's how you sound. It's 100% KU McQueen. Press record, I'll take
it. All right, what are we going to record?
Oh, cool it, Cloud. There's plenty to say. Come on, follow me. Let's go.
All right, I'm here with Faye Crocker, horn player, recording expert at KU High School. Now, what would you like to tell us about yourself, Faye?
I don't know.
Oh, come on, it's finished, sister. Let's pick this one.
This is Faye. Wait. What does that mean?
It means to record, make records. You need a cigarette. Everyone smokes through the microphone.
I don't want to smoke.
Hey, Faye, don't crank the cool. Here's something to hold. It's like a prop. I'm making more profit. All right, give me a horn.
I'm not allowed to let you carry my horn.
Why?
Because if it gets dropped, I have to pay for it.
All right, let's go.
They walk through the parking lot.
Bacon, 940.
What is that?
I heard it in a war movie.
No, they don't say bacon, 940 during a war?
Well, maybe we're thinking about different wars.
No, this is on war radio. You got to say something buzzing.
A family arrives in a car.
All right, hold it. No, walk over there to Oliver's editor.
Everett, no, that's a terrible idea. That's not fair.
You're gonna have to answer some questions before we let you into the game.
Hello, Everett.
What is this? What's going on?
Well, we're recording interviews. I have Kayuga winning by 8. What are your thoughts on the game tonight?
You need a light bag?
Oh, no, I'm just holding it like people do with microphones.
Ask some questions.
Kid, you're making me nervous.
It's just a question. Ask any more question about anything. It doesn't matter.
Oh, did you know that a squirrel bit through the wire in the gym?
I did not know that tonight.
No, I knew that. No, it wasn't tonight. It was back when Clem was still teaching.
That's Clem was teaching. Yeah.
Tell me more.
It was actually a chipmunk.
Chipmunk. No, hold back out your thing.
Tell me more.
Well, I don't know anymore.
Okay, then ask what her feelings are.
Interrogation and interview.
What's your feelings on chipmunks?
Well, they're They're cute, so long as they stay out of people's cars and houses and hair.
Yeah, that's good. Ask her if she wants to hear it.
You want to hear your biscuit?
What? My biscuit?
Yeah, we made a biscuit.
No, we don't call them. It's not called a biscuit.
Well, see,
no. A recording is not a biscuit.
What's this for? Is this going on the air?
No, you're not going on. What kind of question is that? You tune in to the radio to hear a family talking in their car while they're eating.
No, I guess not.
No, yeah, you don't. No one does. So there's your answer, unfiltered. Brought to you by me.
Honey, you are too funny. Where'd you get this bit?
Well, it comes with the recorder. You should try it. All you gotta do is hold the microphone up to your mouth. Hey, Daisy, you old enough to be going to basketball games?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know, but I think you gotta be at least 5 years old.
I am 5 years old.
Well, look out now. Good thing for that, because if you weren't, I'd have to take you home and go to bed early. Have fun at the game. I like your haircut, you fuzzy duck.
Thanks for including us. Have a good night.
I'm Precious Four. Start talking about something.
What do I say?
Give me a horn.
No,
I'm not going to drop it. Take your mic out. Take it out.
Faye complies.
Good, now, what's your favorite subject in school? Aren't you like some big science girl?
Yes.
All right, tell me about science.
Look, you better be careful with my horn or else you have to deal with Mr. Pike. Because did you know that Robbie Ritter set his horn behind the car and they backed over it?
That's good. Did you know that Robbie Ritter set his horn behind their car and they backed over it?
I'm sorry, what's that? Oh, hello, Faye.
Hi, Mr. Stanley.
What's this? Is this a school project?
No, Everett's just having me ask people questions and record them on my tape recorder.
Well, it's broken.
What?
It's not turning. It stopped working.
No, it's brand new.
I don't know what happened. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Stemmons. We'll record you another time. Thanks for stopping for us. We'll record you another time.
Oh, that's okay. You guys have a good night.
Can we fix it?
Shh. It's not really broken. Mr. Stemmons is just a nowhere man. He's a full-on pale one. We gotta get out of that conversation.
Well, it's not really broken?
No, you can't waste tape, Faye. Not on a tombstone like Mr. Stemmons.
Double-dealing devil dog. That had me so scared. I paid for that with my own money.
Yeah, you can always do that to someone. If someone's a wet rag, and just tell them, oh, I'm sorry it's broken. We'll have to reschedule, and then you just never reschedule.
Well, I can't do that to someone.
Well, yeah, you can. Why not?
Because it's lying.
Nah, it's not lying. It's stopping someone from embarrassing themselves.
Not if you don't make them feel embarrassed.
Putting up the numbers means you got to get what you want out of people, not be afraid to cut them off or tell them to shut
up.
I'm
not putting up any numbers.
I'm sorry, you two. I'm gonna need to see a license for that.
Oh, this ain't no shotgun, Fabby Fred. And you're lucky it ain't, because you'd all be dead. Faye's got a new recorder. Talk to her. Hey, ask him a question, Faye.
Okay, about what?
Well, now I'm nervous again.
What is this?
It's a tape recorder.
Ask if they ever heard bacon, bacon, not
bacon, bacon, huh? What are you talking
about? Bacon, what?
I heard it in a war movie.
Now, hold the mic to your mouth.
Have you ever heard the phrase bacon, bacon, 940 in a war movie?
That is not.
I think you mean breaker, breaker.
That's what it is. See, I was close.
Whoa, cut the gas, Cube. You were a mile wide.
Do you have your own show now, Faye?
Uh-huh, yeah, she does. It's called Teenage Rendezvous, and her radio name is Cayuga Queen. She takes requests and tells stories of young love.
I think that's a great idea. You should get my own show.
All right, start studying for your license. Oh, and learn how to ask a question.
What license?
A radio license, FCC.
Are you guys going to the game?
No, we gotta work.
Oh, of course. You do such a good job, honey. How's your mother?
Did Faye tell you about the Grimaldis?
Well, about their dog getting electrocuted?
No, not about their dog. Ask Faye.
You need to stay out of Faye's business.
It's not
Marjorie.
Faye's business. It's the Grimaldis' business, and she knows the whole business. Just make sure you turn off that tape machine.
Oh, we'll do exactly that.
She knows the whole business.
Shut your mouth, Marjorie.
Look out now.
Didn't say anything, Fred. I could appear in court, put my hand on a Bible, Star and say, God
problems.
And everyone, come. That I didn't say Faye, anything.
God and everyone.
Yeah, I am.
Faye and Everett continue to a street. A dog walks by.
All right, tell me the word on the Grimaldis.
We'll talk about other people's business.
Have they come up with some other way to fill up this tape recorder, Faye Crocker?
I can't. I just get so nervous, and I don't know what to say. Although I was enjoying it back there when we got going, asking them questions.
Man, it's just you and me talking. Like, tell me the craziest caller you ever had.
Oh, I know what I can tell you. Not about a caller, but about some science I was reading. Can I tell you about that?
You certainly can, Faye Cordelia Crocker.
That's not my middle name.
I know it isn't. I don't care. I mean, I didn't know, but I definitely don't care.
Faye pulls magazines from her horn case, and they continue on.
What else you got in there?
Just my mouthpiece and some hairpins.
Hairpins?
Yeah, my mom says you can stash hairpins anywhere, and one day you'll be glad you did it.
Jeez, that's weird.
All right, I just read about this, and I think it's boss. So don't you make me feel like a fool for liking it.
Oh, I would never. Come on, let me have it. Razz my berries.
All right, well, did you know that there was actually an experiment done earlier this year in Lincoln, Nebraska, for a radio-controlled car by RCA, like a full-size one?
Oh, late dead.
Yep. It's called electronic highway control. And this article says that there's a series of circuits buried in the pavements with little lats connected to them so they can communicate to the cars with radio control and take over steering and braking. It's crazy.
Oh, wait, so this is already an experiment. They already did this?
Mm-hmm. In Lincoln, Nebraska, in April. You press a button on the dash of the car that says electronic drive, and the car starts to drive itself.
Dude, that's incredible.
Yeah, I know. And get this. Well, actually, two things. First of all, it can tell if there's a car stopped up to a mile ahead, and it'll slow traffic automatically, like all cars at once, like a school of fish. And two, it doesn't need eyes to work. So if your vision's bad, or if it's raining cats and dogs outside, or if your headlamps won't work too well, then the car still works. Oh, and a voice will come over the radio and give you directions. So like if you're on the highway and your exit's coming up, or if you need to switch highways, a voice will literally interrupt your radio and tell you that your exit's approaching, so you can get back behind the wheel and take control again. I know that was three things, but when I read this, I was like, wow, really? Can all this really be true? And it is. It's 100% true. Tested in April this year, Lincoln, Nebraska. This article's in this Science Digest.
So a voice comes through the radio and tells you what direction to go?
Uh-huh. It's in this article.
Does it say when this is going to happen?
1974. And by 1990, all roads will be electronic.
Oh, really?
You don't believe me, do you? You're just pulling my leg.
Well, no, I'm not pulling your leg. I love it. I'm interviewing you. I'm playing a part.
Well, I just remembered two more stories. We have time to do those, too.
Absolutely we do. Come on, let's fill it up.
All right, well, if you like that, then brace your brain for this, because there's this article about these tubes.
You tell me all about it.
All right, hold on, because I gotta be able to look past all these ads and squirrely beginner stuff.
They walk through town.
Hold on, because I want to read it to you the way it was written, because I want it to have the same effect on you. All right, here you go. So, picture a man in New York City, in Times Square. And he walks down a set of stairs into a subway tunnel, and he boards a train car. And he stows his suitcase in a rack over his head and sits down. He starts reading a book. And about an hour later, he feels the train coming to a stop. So he gets up, gathers his things, grabs his suitcase, puts on his hat, steps out of the train, heads up some stairs, and comes out at the Golden Gate Bridge.
What? Whoa, how is that possible?
I know, isn't that crazy? So the train travels between 2,000 and 5,000 miles per hour in these tubes all across the country. That's how it's all going to be. It's called vacuum tube transportation. And all these tubes, they crisscross all of the world. So we're going to sit in cars that run through the tubes like little hot dogs through a garden hose.
So wait a minute.
It's going to be everywhere by the year 2000.
Wait a minute.
It's in this article here.
Whoa, now wait a minute. Hold on. Does this mean that the whole other thing won't happen? The radio cars and the highways?
No. No, I think that'll be for shorter distances. This will replace things like trains and airplanes.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, even over oceans?
I think. Actually, I don't know. It doesn't say.
All right, looks like we got time for one more. Are you ready with your third story, Miss Crocker?
Yes, hold on. Actually, do I have time for two more or just one?
No, just one, I'm afraid.
All right, well.
Come on.
I'm going to end with this one because my mom doesn't think this is ever going to happen, and she said they just say things like this to sell magazines.
What an intriguing setup, Faye. Please go on.
Okay, well. In the future, every baby will be assigned a telephone number at birth, and it'll be his for life. And we'll all have palm-sized dials, like a clamshell with no receiver. Or, well, I guess we'll have little speakers and microphones instead. And on one side, you'll have the dial. And on the back will be a Lilliput screen, so like a miniature television screen. You can keep it in your pocket, so you can call your friend in Rome or New York or anywhere and see his face on your dial and have a conversation with him in color. The screens will be in color.
Which magazine is that?
Modern Mechanics. This article is a couple years old. But, oh, it also said that if you call your friend and he doesn't answer, then you know they're dead.
What? Why would you know they're dead?
Because they always have it with them so they can always answer.
What? I don't believe that.
What? Here, you can see a picture of
like
it.
It's like a space novel.
I know.
I think I agree with your mom. You know, she's a wise keeper. Actually, I believe the train tubes and the highways, but the tiny TV telephones, that's cuckoo. All right. Hey, it's been fun. I gotta run. Tune in. All right, tune in.
I will.
Oh, look out now.
Thank you.
Everett rushes off. Faye grabs her horn case and heads inside a building. The image fades to blurry shapes undulating over a black background. The shapes coalesce to form a black and white image on the vintage-style television screen. Faye enters a switchboard office. Spotting her, a dark-haired woman removes her headset.
Tape recorder.
What's that?
I got my tape recorder.
Oh, that's right. Is that it?
Yeah, it's the Weston House one. And me and Everett just recorded ourselves all the way over from the gym.
You got the one he told you about?
Yeah, listen.
Rome or New York or anywhere and see his face on your dial and have a conversation with him.
Oh, me, Faye. He is such a fun boy.
Yeah, and he said when you record, it's called Bacon Biscuits.
Bacon Biscuits?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be.
Yeah.
Say, did you get a look at those Picasso boys?
Yeah, just for a sec before the game, they were getting off the bus. They were tall.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah. They got a bunch of Indian boys in their team, too, about four or five of them. Or maybe there's a couple families of them, like four or five brothers or cousins.
That probably means they're going to beat us like a drum. And I don't mean that because they're Indians.
Yeah, when they put on their jerseys, they look like grown-ups.
That means we're going to lose.
Hey, were the lights flickering in here at all?
No, why?
Just because they were flickering over at the school. Arlo's working on it.
Last time when I was still teaching, it was a squirrel that threw a wire. All right, I'm off. The line to San Muriel's got a permanent signal, so it's skunked. So if you want to plug that out, it would let Fran and Judith know.
As the dark-haired woman leaves, the image becomes colorized.
Number, please.
Faye reaches for a cord connected to a switchboard jack.
Number, please.
She disconnects it from the slot, then removes her headset. She approaches the radio, turns it on, and tunes to a station. The pretty teen walks back to her seat and puts on her headset.
This is WOTW Radio in Cayuga, New Mexico, and this is the news for the hour. Boeing has introduced its new line of very own
line. Faye frowns at the radio. She stares at the device with a quizzical expression. She answers a call.
Number, please.
Officer Sherman declared the incident was caused by, and I quote,
number, please.
Reckless driving coupled with slick road surfaces. Here is the
Hello?
The teen flips a switch on the board, leaving the call on hold. She connects a cord to a different jack.
Top secret concept. It will apparently be more consistent and
I'm
efficient.
A city inward.
Hey, Winnie, it's me. And finally, can you tell me if you've ever heard this sound before?
She switches the cord connecting to the first call, then disconnects it and returns to the call with Winnie.
You ever heard that?
No, but put it back on. Let me let some of the other ladies listen.
Okay. Listen, Winnie, I got another call coming through, so I'll call you back a little later. Number, please.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Listen, ma'am, can you disconnect and then try again? It's all... Ma'am, is this an emergency?
Because there's something in the canyon.
Can you tell me where you are?
We're going in the cellar.
Leaving the call connected, Faye flips a switch on the board. She alternates between listening to the first call and the most recent call. She connects another cord to a jack. Frowning, the pretty teen disconnects that cord and plugs it into a different jack.
Hello?
Hey, Josie, listen, it's Faye. Is Officer Pruitt or Boker around?
He's not here, and Mr. Pruitt left with them.
Well, they didn't answer at the station. No one's at the station?
No, they were here, but a trucker just came in off the highway and reported something.
What?
He didn't say, but it whipped the wind up and made him spill his truck, so avocados are all over the road.
Is Officer Abbott around? Off duty? Because isn't Judy cheerleading?
Yes, but I haven't seen him.
Can you try and find him?
He probably left with Mr. Boker and Mr. Pruitt. What's going on?
I don't know. Probably nothing. Listen, Josie, I got another call coming in, so can you let me know if you hear anything?
Okay, bye.
Faye answers the call.
Name of city, inward.
Hey, where'd you go?
Winnie, we got a call coming through, and same sound came from her line, but I couldn't get her name or anything. She didn't sound hurt. What should I do? Winnie?
Looking thoughtful, Faye unplugs the call. She connects the cord to a different jack.
Can you turn your radio on and tell me if you hear any kind of sound?
Like what?
Like something that just came in through the board a couple minutes ago and I wanted to, it went away. I just wanted to see if it
I don't want to disturb him while he's on the air.
Don't be shy with him. He doesn't care if you call him.
She knits her brow.
Ethel? Ethel?
Disconnecting the cord, she plugs it into the jack of the previous call. She moves it into the jack of the first call. Switching the cord to a new slot, Faye places another call.
Hello?
Grace, hi. Can you run over and check on Ethel and Maddie? I tried the Van Ortons, but they're at the game. I'm afraid everyone's at the game right now.
Who is this now?
It's Faye.
Oh, my lands, when I can't see a face, my perception gets pickled.
So can you go check on Ethel and Maddie?
I suppose so. Is everything okay? Because I'm in the kitchen with my hands in a ball of cookie dough.
I think so. It's just I called Ethel and the line got cut. We're having a lot of connection issues tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. Can I get my hands washed off and my cookie sheet in the oven? Or do you need me to go right now? I can go right now, but I might dirty up the doorknobs.
You can wash your hands. Whenever you get the chance, really. I'm sure it's fine. I'll just...
Where's your mother, sweetie?
She's working nights now.
Sorry
for calling you so late. I tried Gertie Van Orton, but they're at the game. Everyone's at the game right now.
It's not a bother, sweetie. Let me get this finished up, and I'll go check, and I'll call you right back. You said it's Ethel babysitting?
Yes.
All right. Just give me a few minutes.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The teen looks toward the radio and lifts another cord.
Oh, and there it goes, spinning away. The Jimmy Rain and the Crocs with their cranking song, hopping and cooking. You're listening to Everett the Maverick Sloan, and the show, as you know, is Highway Hits, brought to you by Santa Mira Mills and Clover Bloom Honey, with a co-sponsorship from our business of the week, the Utter Stand, providing the whole valley with the coldest confections and the sweetest slurs. We know it's a busy night out there for everyone with the first game of the season and a valley rivalry at that, but just remember, during basketball season, the Utter Stand closes for the games and reopens after for 1 hour for those of you who need a little late-night snack before you start... driving your tanks home and piling up some Z's. And that's the word from the bird. It's always a silent night here when the statesmen are playing. But, oh, for the five of you out there listening, jump on the horn, give us your dedications, and let everyone know you're out there. We hope you stick around and follow us till the sign-off. WOTW time now. 12 minutes past the hour. Look out now. 62 degrees outside. Stick with our station and get lost in our sound. Coming at you now, starting with Gabe Gunn singing Scream and Screech here on Highway Hill.
A faint smile plays on her lips. Connecting the cord to the board, Faye makes another call.
This is WOTW, Everett the Maverick.
Everett, it's Faye. I'm sorry. Please don't be mad at me.
Faye, I thought you were a caller.
I know. I'm sorry. I knew you'd think that. Please don't be mad.
Is it about the tape recorder?
No, a sound came through the board and interrupted your radio show. I don't know. It's just it's never come through over here
before. You said something interrupted my show?
Yeah, through the radio.
What does it sound like?
Well, I don't know. I can connect you through it.
Did it sound Mexican?
No, it didn't sound Mexican.
Because we crossed signals with the station in Mexico.
It sounded like something that could be unsafe, because we had this lady...
Well, why? Nothing sounded different over here. How long ago was it?
Right at the beginning of the news. Are you mad at me?
No, but I don't know what you want me to do. It's probably just your radio.
Well, can you listen to the sound coming through the board right now?
Is it the same sound you heard interrupt my show?
Yeah, mostly, and they came through right on top of
the
show.
Yeah, all right, connected.
She patches Everett into the first call. Faye disconnects the line.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, me neither. And then this lady called. She said there was something going on out of town, and she was going down to her cellar, and then that sound came through on her line. Then I called Ethel because she's babysitting Maddie, and her line got cut.
And when did you say my show got cut into?
Right at the beginning of the news.
All right, well, I didn't hear it in my headphones, but it's closed circuit in this room, so if it went out from the station, it'll be recorded on playback. So you stay on the line while I rewind it and play it back, and I'll let you know if I hear anything.
Okay.
This is VOTW Radio in Cayuga, New Mexico, and this is the news for the hour. Boeing has introduced its new line of...
That was it.
Whoa, what?
That was it. It came through just like that.
I'll be.
What? Why? Is it bad?
That's a good question. If it's foreign or cold, you better believe the Air Force will be coming to town.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
We get in trouble?
We haven't done anything.
Yeah, that's true.
She nods to herself.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Hey, send me that signal again, and I'll put it on the air. I mean, if anyone's out there listening, maybe they'll know something.
And you sure you won't get in trouble?
I don't care if we do this good radio.
Biting her lip, Faye holds the cord.
Okay, I'm doing it. Here, I'm sending the signal.
Don't call me for 10 minutes unless someone calls in. I don't want any false alarms. Watch the clock now, 10 minutes.
Okay, I understand. I'll wait for the calls. Here you go.
She plugs the cord in and removes her headset.
Well, there it was, just like I said it would be. That was Gabe Gunton, followed by Crazy Waves from the Golden Globes. It's 7:18 here at WOTW. Hey, listen up, because we got a quick query for anyone that wants to take a crack. We've got a sound we'd like to play that seems to be sort of bouncing around the valley tonight. We'd like to know your thoughts. We're standing by the phones, and we'd love to know if there's an old expert or ute ham operator we don't know about that's tangling up our antenna. And for the caller who can help us out and can tell us what the sound is, we've got a free piece of Elvis's carpet pulled directly from his floor in Memphis. Lines are open. Please call with any information.
A smile spreads on her lips. Faye rushes to the office door and opens it. She grabs the cigarette Everett gave her and lights it up in the doorway. As she smokes, a roving view travels past her to the deserted streets of the town. Sparse lights illuminate the closed shops across from the switchboard office. The wandering view turns and speeds up. We roam down a dark lane between two buildings. Turning onto a grassy knoll, the gliding view increases in speed. Farm buildings stand opposite each other. A dimly illuminated water tower rises in the distance. Traveling past a house with a well-lit porch, we go through a fence and head down a dirt road. Lights shine through the leafy branches of nearby trees. The high school parking lot comes into view. Outside the gym, children and adults watch the student basketball game through the open doorway. Inside, cheerleaders perform a routine while the teams play. The students in the stands cheer from their seats. Second-string players from both teams sit on the benches in front of the bleachers. The scoreboard shows the home team with 20 points and the visiting team with 17. A player in a red uniform takes a jump shot and makes it. Wearing white, a Cayuga High School player takes control of the ball and dribbles to the other side of the court. The ball gets passed to several players, and one of them fakes a jump shot. A circling view moves toward Benny and Sam sitting at the commentator's table. The roaming view continues up the bleachers. It goes out through an open window at the top into the dark night beyond. Increasing in speed, it hurries past a long building and turns. In the distance, red neon letters set at the base of a radio tower on a roof. They read, WOTW. The wandering view moves behind the radio station to Everett standing alone and gazing up at the sky as he smokes. The spectacled teen takes a long drag as we pass him and enter the radio station through its open door. A phone sits on the desk. Everett picks up the handset.
Everett, we got a caller.
Put him through.
He's from out of town. It sounds like a man knows something.
Then put him through now, Faye. Come on, please.
Sir, we are connecting you now.
Faye plugs in a cord.
Hello, sir. This is Everett Sloan. Can you hear me?
Hello, yes. How are you?
I'm good. Can I get your name?
Yes, my name is Billy.
Billy. Okay, thank you, Billy. And I need to tell you first, we don't allow any swear words or inappropriate stories on the air. I could lose my job. And I don't have a delay here, and I want to put you right through onto the air, but I need you to promise me that we're safe in doing so.
Of course. I understand. I don't swear talk like that anyway in my life.
Okay, I'm breaking the rules to do this, so please, you know, be honest to me. Maybe ask me if you think something needs to be discussed off the air, and I'll go to a break and put on a record, all right?
Okay, I can do that.
All right, we are going on the air here shortly in 3, 2, 1.
A black and white TV shows a radio.
And we're back, everybody. Sorry to cut that last song short, but we do have a caller here who may know something. Now, Billy, would you mind telling us all what you know?
Yes, I have a story that might be helpful. I don't know it may not be, but I'll go ahead and give it to you.
All right, Billy, well, we're listening.
Well, so I was in the military, and there were always jobs and work we didn't know anything about.
And what do you mean?
I mean, we would get assigned to places without knowing where we were, to do things none of us understood, which is normal in the military. And one night, I was woken up by my superior. He had me get in a uniform and report for duty. Then a carrier plane landed, and they loaded me up by myself. We made several more stops picking up other guys. Then we flew for at least 2 hours. And when we landed, they loaded us up into a bus. But this one had all of the windows painted black, so there was no telling where we were going.
Fade to black.
Then when we arrived, it was still desert scrubs and flatlands. But there were tents and tunnels and underground labs or test bunkers or something. And I pretty quickly got briefed by some officer I'd never seen. And he told us everything we were seeing was classified. And if we ever spoke about it, it would endanger America, and they would know. And we were all sent to this rocky, kind of sandy alcove, and they had us start digging a square hole with their digging machines and such. And we built walls out of blocks and a concrete floor and such. And we built windows that connected to a viewing room and ventilation. And they had us sleep in this room filled with cots, war supplies, all underground. Then one morning we woke up and reported to duty, and there was something enormous in that hole, covered in a tarp.
What do you mean?
The TV shows Everett.
It was bigger than an airplane, but no one was allowed to see it. And there were guards surrounding all day.
Well, what'd it look like?
It was mostly smooth, but it looked broken or damaged because there were some rough patches.
You think it was American?
There was no way to know. You don't ask anything like that. We want to know just like anybody wants to know about something. But you trust your superiors, and you follow orders. But this one worried me.
And why is that?
Probably because it was so secretive.
Okay, so what happened next?
Well, we built the ceiling over this thing carefully, and then when they were done with us, staff got us all boarded on the plane. And when the propellers had started spinning and we were about to take off, and the radio started playing the sound.
What sound?
The same sound you just played tonight.
You sure it was the same?
Oh, I couldn't forget it.
Cut to black.
And when we finally took off and I looked out the window, you could see guys were starting to cover the airstrip with dirt like we'd never been there. And then the sound disappeared and we got further away. And when I got back, then I started getting really sick. And in the next few weeks, I developed some kind of lung condition. So now I didn't breathe so good, and I think whatever that area of the desert caused it, or something, maybe radiation, because I was always healthy. Then I got time at the military hospital, and then a couple of years later, I saw one of the guys who had been on that detail with me in the desert. I asked him if he'd got sick afterwards, and he said he had. And then he told me that that was the second time he'd been picked up for something up like that. And he told me about a night when he'd been commissioned in Nevada, and he was taken to the Colorado River, where there was a river barge carrying something twice its size down the river. And when they got several hours down the river, there was a makeshift station, and they unloaded the cargo onto two army trucks. And when they got done loading it up, the same sound we heard out in the desert also went through all of the radios there on the ground and on the barge. And then he said the two army trucks drove off into the night, and the sound faded with them.
So did he know what it was?
No. But since our detail in the desert, he'd asked around and he'd heard about another guy that knew about the noises. So we met up with him off base, but he only knew pieces. See, everybody only knows pieces in the military. Nobody knows the whole thing, and that's part of the plan, which is why they pieced together teams from all over the country and only brought us in for one task at a time, so no one would know everything.
And wait, I'm sorry, you're gonna have to be clear. Is this sound a military sound?
That's what we asked this guy at Walker.
And what did he say?
He said it wasn't military. It wasn't military from any country. It was coming from thousands of feet higher than anything could fly.
How did he know that?
Because it was a radar operator.
So were these signals frequent?
No.
And can I ask, I'm assuming this is before Sputnik.
This was years before Sputnik. And signals like yours have been caught going back and forth.
What do you mean?
Like communication. Like one says something over here in this part of the sky, and another says something back. Sometimes they were recorded at Sputnik heights, and sometimes just a few hundred feet off the ground.
Where?
Lots of places. All over.
What do you mean, all over? Billy? Billy, I think we lost you, Billy. Well, for the five of you out there listening, it looks like we lost Billy. Let me work on getting him back on the air. I'm back in a moment.
Everett picks up the phone.
Hey, what happened?
I don't know. He got cut. That's what's been happening.
You gotta get him back.
I can't.
Why not?
He called long distance. I have no idea where he lives.
Then call the board by Holland.
We can't. He probably gave him a fake name or he called through.
You can't dial back out of the line that just came.
Look like that.
Then look him up. Look him up in the phone book.
Under what? Billy near Holloman?
I don't know. Damn it.
Hold on, we gotta call.
Bay answers.
Famous City, inward.
Calling the Gordo operator.
Connecting. Cayuga, number please.
Yes, this is Billy.
I'll connect you. Oh, yes, Everett.
Billy, what's going on? We need your real number.
I'm sorry, but I can't do that.
Okay, then I can't put you back on the air. I would like to, but there's a breach of ethics here, because I have no way of knowing if what you're saying is true.
I know. I understand. I don't mean to put you in a place that would get you in problems.
Billy, I have to ask, why are you telling us all this? Is this going to get us in trouble?
I suppose I'm telling you because I'm sick. And I'm old. And no one listens to us. I don't want people to know what we did for them.
Why do you think no one listens to you?
I think part of it's because I'm black.
Everett and Faye look thoughtful.
I'm sorry if that's a problem.
No, I don't think it is.
I thought that might be the case. We've just never had a black caller before.
Well, I'm sorry. I should have probably told you that. But everyone on these details were black or Mexican. All of us doing the sweat work.
You think they did that on purpose?
I know they did.
Why?
Because who's going to listen to us? But there's a part of all of this that you can check into so that you know I'm not making this up.
Okay, well, yeah, I think we need that because you can see why at this point all we have is your word.
Well, there's one gentleman I'll tell you about in a minute.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, Billy, but I'm still recording this even though we're not on the air, all right?
Yes, please do.
Okay. Go ahead, Billy.
And so this guy we talked to at Walker Base, the radar operator who we met off-site, after he retired, he didn't stop with the signals. In fact, he started waiting for them and was trying to record one of them on his own, using radio and war surplus equipment he repaired.
And did he ever get anything?
Yeah, he did. Finally. It took a long time. But one night, he finally got one and recorded it. And then he made copies and mailed them to a bunch of us. Guys who had been around some of these hidden details.
What did he think these signals were?
Well, that's where you have to make the jump. Because he told us it's something talking and then disappearing. Something very high that we can't see.
And he made copies of these?
Yes. And he sent them to us. Different guys on these details here in the area. And when I finally got my tape and got to a player, and I played it back, it made my hair stand up on end.
Why?
Because they were the same sound I'd heard out in the desert.
So do you still have that tape?
No. I didn't want to be caught with it, so I burned it. But one of the other guys, another Air Force gentleman who had been on one of these security details and heard these noises too, and he lives in Cayuga, so he got sent a tape just like mine, and that's what I thought you were playing.
There's
tonight.
One in Cayuga with who?
Raymond Buck, an ex-Air Force gentleman.
So he was mailed a tape with one of these signals on.
But Raymond Buck died.
Oh, no.
Did you say he passed away?
Yes.
I thought that may have happened.
I'm sorry, Billy.
Well, I didn't know him well, you know.
Do you know where his tape would be?
No. Maybe if he had kids.
No, Mrs. Buck gave all his tapes to the library.
No, there's not a tape recorder in the library, Faye.
No, there is. It's in the basement. They haven't had a chance to look at all the tapes yet, so they haven't put it out. I know
where it is. No, the library's closed, and no one will be at the board.
Everyone's at the gate. No one's going to call. I know how to get into the library.
Billy, what do you think it'll do if we can find it and play it?
I don't know. But if you're going to do it, you better do it. Because something's up there now. And they don't stay for long.
Faye wears a look of anticipation. Everett stares off in thought.
Okay, Faye, run.
As she pulls off her headset, her glasses fall off, and she picks them back up. The pretty teen hurries from the switchboard office and runs down the deserted street. The image of Faye becomes part of a black and white television screen. She sprints across a grassy lawn to a building. Finding the front door locked, she darts around the side of the building to another door. The pretty teen struggles with the knob, then shoulders it open. Now Faye's image transitions back to color. Dumping out a jar of change and other items, she picks up a set of keys and jogs into a kitchen. She turns over a stock pot filled with utensils and dashes outside. Her image becomes part of the black and white TV screen again as she steals a bike leaning against the building. Faye pedals down a sidewalk. Arriving outside the library, she dumps the bike in a bush. Pretty teen ascends steps to a back door and unlocks it. With the stock pot in hand, she goes down a staircase. Faye enters a basement office and starts grabbing tape reels from a cluttered desk. She loads them into the stock pot. As she exits the library, Everett pulls up in a car and the image transitions to color.
Get in!
Did you steal a car?
Come on, get in. Did you get him?
I stole the bicycle.
Answer me, Faye.
Yes, I got them.
All right.
Whose car is this?
It's Mr. McKean's.
Does Mr. McKean know?
No, of course not.
She pulls away from the building. Holding the stock pot in her lap, Faye turns to him with a smile.
Are you going to give Billy a piece of Elvis's carpet?
What?
A
He said to give the caller who helped us a piece of Elvis' carpet.
Oh.
He keeps his eyes on the road.
Yeah, no, that's not really Elvis' carpet. I mean, it was, but we gave it all away a while back. So now Jack Sage and Red Gant have both scraps, and we just give away carpet from Jess Purvis' house.
Everett, that's lying. I don't really think that's Elvis' carpet.
Shut up, Pat.
She faces forward. The car's headlights cut through the night as they drive down the dark road. Teens arrive back at the radio station and dash inside. Faye sets the stockpot full of tape reels on the floor and picks up the phone.
Billy, it's Faye, the Cayuga operator. We got a lot of tapes here. Do you remember which one it was?
It's been a long time, but I think it was clear.
They're all clear, Billy. Billy?
She eyes the handset.
The line cut.
What? Billy?
Everett puts the phone down.
I can't reconnect him without going back to the board.
Yeah, don't go. Just hand me those one at a time. Hey, get out of my chair.
He complies, and he threads a reel into a tape player.
So you don't believe Mr. Billy?
Oh, no. But if there's something in the sky, I want to know.
He plays the tape.
Baxter is a...
Next one.
She hands him another.
I know what you're looking for.
No, don't.
Could he record it over it?
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately.
He threads another reel as she reaches for the stock pot.
So I did, and...
Everett removes the tape, and she hands him a new one.
What is that recorder?
This is the Maggie PT-6.
Maggie?
Yeah, for a MagnaCord. It's like the broadcast brother of your recorder. It's how we play the games and ads.
People really listen to the games the next day, even though they already know what happened?
Yeah, they do. They don't care. They already know what happened. They just want to hear their kid's name on the radio.
The take-up reel spins rapidly. Everett removes it. Faye hands him a new tape reel.
Saying he's going to get you in trouble?
Well, if it does, I don't care. It's a good radio. And it'll give me a better job somewhere else.
Where'd you want to go?
I don't know. Probably West Coast. That's where everything's happening in radio.
A somber expression washes over her as she hands him another reel.
I'm gonna get out, too. Not till Maddie's older, of course, but sometime.
So where to do it? You go to college?
Yeah, probably just to work on a bigger switchboard somewhere. Right now, I could work at a hospital or a hotel or a school on their switchboard, but... If I want to work on a bigger board, I'd have to transfer to a bigger city and get hired on by the phone company.
No college?
I can't afford college, Everett.
I mean, there's loans. You could look into that.
I'd love that.
A close view shows Everett threading the tape reel. He winds the take-up reel, then presses play. Faye's eyes widen.
Golly Moses. That's it. And it's clear.
What are you gonna do?
He puts on headphones and pulls a needle off a record.
Folks, we got another sound we do need your help with. Listen up and let us know. And Billy, if this is the sound, give us a call. Let's get rid of this, cats.
Flipping a switch, he plays the sound over the radio. The bespectacled teen absently rubs his mouth as he and Faye listen. He glances at her, but she doesn't notice. The lights start to flicker, then go out.
Oh my God. Everett!
Oh my God.
What did you do? Are you playing a trick on me?
I'm not playing a trick on you. Hold still.
What's going on, Everett?
Hey, calm down. There's a flashlight somewhere. There's a
silver. What's going on, Everett?
Hey, Faye, calm down! Silver flashlight.
Igniting a lighter, he grabs a flashlight.
I knew it was something. I knew it.
Fuck.
What'd you do?
I didn't do anything. I don't know.
There's lights out here.
We just experienced a blackout after playing this. I'm recording for later in case we got news.
Why do you change your voice like that?
So like what?
When you're on the radio, you always change your voice. Why do you do that?
Because it's how radio sounds, babe. Look, I don't need your judgment right now.
They stand outside.
So what?
The switchboard!
Faye, wait!
She runs off. Setting down the portable tape recorder, Everett grabs keys from the desk inside. He hurries to the car and gets in. drives after the pretty teen and continues sprinting through town. Spotting her up ahead, he pulls up beside Faye.
Goddamn, Faye! Get in!
She complies, and they drive off.
I shouldn't have been gone that long.
Why are you always running down the street? We just
because
drove
I don't have
here.
A car, Everett. I never ride in cars. I just walk everywhere.
All right, I'll sweat.
He keeps his eyes on the road, and she looks deep in thought.
So you still don't think something's going on?
I think if anything's happening, it's that we're being spied on or we're about to be invaded.
By who?
Soviets.
You really think so?
100%, absolutely. And this is exactly where they come into, southern border.
She looks out her window. Everett pulls up outside the switchboard office and parks. Faye hurries inside and answers a series of calls.
Number, please. Sorry for the wait. Number, please. Okay, I'll connect you.
I'm not sure.
No, you're the first one to... Yes, we'll let them know. Thank you. Number, please. Yes, we're notifying Highway Patrol. We'll relay any news to you. Thank you. Thank you. Number, please. Sorry for the wait. All right. Thank you. Goodbye. Thank you. Goodbye.
She shakes her head at Everett.
People are saying there's something in the sky.
He talks into the recorder as he steps outside. A couple gets out of a car.
7:45, write that down.
Can't you just record it?
Yeah. Folks, it is 7:45 p.m. and we may have some.
Did you see
some
explosions
in the Santa Fe? Oh, what?
There is something in the sky. We followed it from Colt Canyon. I'm going to
call Gerald. I'm going by Gerald now. Please call me Gerald.
I'm Everett. This is Faye. We just had the power cut off at the radio
station.
Where
is this?
Oh,
yeah, I knew how it hits from 7 to 11. Are you listening?
80 miles an hour.
Yeah, he does the old stuff. I do the old
stuff.
I don't
listen to something
Faye runs back inside, dons her headset, and answers a call.
Number, please. Yes, Everett's here. Would you like to speak with him here? Okay, I'll connect you. Everett, come to board one. There's a lady calling in for the station.
Everett jogs inside and sets down the portable recorder. He grabs the headset.
Hello, this is Everett the Maverick Sloan, WOTW.
I can tell you what's going on.
What do you mean?
I can tell you more about what that fellow told you on the radio and give you more for your radio show.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I would prefer you to come to my house. I would like to tell you here.
There's something in the sky, ma'am.
I know. That's what I want to talk to you about. I can tell you a lot more than you know right now if you come here. I think what I can tell you would be very important tonight.
All right, well, what's your address?
1616 Sycamore.
1616, all right.
You'll need to get a key from the flower pot on the front porch. I leave it there for the boy that brings me groceries. I won't be able to come to the door. I can't walk much anymore, but I'll be here.
All right, well, I'll be there in 1 or 2 minutes. What was your name?
Mabel Blanche.
Okay, Mrs. Blanche, we'll see you shortly. All right, bye-bye. She said she can tell us what's going on. Come on, I told her to be there in a minute.
What's that? Who?
This old lady called her, said she can tell us what's going on.
Do you know her? What's she gonna tell you?
No, I don't. She just said come to her house immediately.
But to tell you what? Where's her house? How do you know she's not crazy?
Look, I don't. She could be, but she sounded fine. It's 1 minute down the aisle.
We're gonna
Sycamore.
Stay out here and watch.
Okay, will you find us if you see anything?
Yes, will you find us if you learn anything?
Yes, I will.
Hey, her line's right there. You can turn the key.
Oh, no, honey, I don't know if frogs are even about those things.
Okay, never mind.
The couple gets back in their car as Faye and Everett leave in theirs. On a dark road.
The world, Faye.
I don't know. She never calls in at night. She's a shut-in.
This could be news.
You really think so?
I really do.
Should I pop my tape recorder?
No, this one's better.
Am I not good enough?
No, it's fine, but it's not broadcast quality. It's good, but it's more like a toy. I don't mean that in a way to get your feelings hurt.
Don't hurt my feelings.
Okay, good, because I hurt girls' feelings a lot.
Don't be a jerk all the time. Probably
hey, you are on a stick with me tonight!
Everett gives her a wide-eyed glance. They pull into a driveway and park. Getting out, they approach a house. Faye hurries after him with the recorder.
Wait up!
You hurry up.
He searches flower pots near the front door. Finding keys, he pulls open the screen and unlocks the front door. With the tape recorder now in hand, the bespectacled teen cautiously steps into the dark house. Faye follows a few steps behind him as they head down a hallway.
I'm back here.
The teens walk toward the back of the house. They go through an open door and find an old woman reading from a piece of paper. She looks up at them and furrows her brow.
Who is she?
This is Faye. I'm Everett. She's the switchboard operator. She's my friend. Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine. You can sit down.
The teens exchange a look, then find seats beside each other.
You're the one on the phone?
Yes.
How old are you, sweetie?
16.
And who are your parents?
Oh, well, I don't have a dad, but my mom is Yodi Crocker. She's
a
nurse.
Can I ask what you were just saying while we were walking in? That was very alarming.
I know it was. I'm sorry. I will explain myself. I'm not some witch, I promise.
Do you mind if we tell people what you tell us on the radio?
That's why I'm telling you.
And can we record you in case this is a news story?
Of course. I hope we will be a news story. I've been waiting my whole life for this.
The tape recorder's reels spin.
Okay, thank you. We want to hear everything you have to tell us, but we do have a very short amount of time, so if we have to...
I understand. Then let me get right to it. I listen to your broadcast every night. I think you're very good, and I hope you can get far away from here.
Thank you.
I will tell you what is happening, but I will have one request for you when I have finished.
Okay, well, I'll do whatever I can.
The gentleman that called in, I believe his stories, because I have a companion story to his. It started before his stories, but they've come here before. And now that these things are happening more often, I have a better idea of what might be out there. But ever since I was a little girl, they've liked this place. They always have.
Who?
The people in the sky.
Mabel wears a serious expression.
So you truly believe that?
I don't have to truly believe it. It's just the truth.
And can you tell me why?
Yes, I can. Have you ever heard about the Bulls Acres raid?
No.
Well, when I was still little, they finished the Alamogordo El Paso rail line. And one day, a passenger train coasted to a stop outside town. When the deputies got there, it was completely empty. Everyone assumed the Apaches took them, so they called it the Bulls Acres raid. But a few days later, beat-up young lady came into town who had jumped off that train. Out in the brush, she'd been hiding out there somewhere. She was dehydrated and wouldn't talk. My friend Charlotte's family took her in. They fed her, gave her a bed, Charlotte's bed, actually. And they telegraphed someone in El Paso to come get her so they could get some answers. Charlotte's dad was the Methodist minister, Batzelbreth. He started the church here. My parents died when I was little, so I lived many weeks of the year with Charlotte's family when my brothers and sisters were working or had too many mouths to feed. But that night, that woman from the train started muttering something in her sleep in Charlotte's room. It wasn't English or Spanish or Indian. So we opened the door a crack to listen. We'd never heard it before, but I remembered it. And then before the next day, she disappeared, crawled out the window, and stole a horse, believe it or not. So if you ever hear about the old horse witch, that's where the story came from. My older sister raised me. But mostly I lived alone. I made dresses and tablecloths and what have you. I was still young when I met Claude Maynard. He was part of the crew putting telephone lines in. We fell in love,
and I conceived my son with him without being married. I actually didn't know that was how you made a baby, believe it or not. But he said he'd come back when he finished work in White Sands, and I believed him. But he never did. When my baby was born, I named him Hollis. A few people were kind to me, but mostly I was on my own with him. This wasn't a neighborhood or a town like it is today. There were scattered houses around the buildings on Ayers. I was a lonely mother, but I did my best. And later on, I heard Claude had died stringing up lights in a cave in Texas for a tourist operation. Of course, that broke my heart. But to get back to when Hollis was still a baby. One night after I'd nursed him, he was asleep in my arms, and he started making the sounds of an infant. And then they became clearer, more vocal. And then he spoke his first words. And the same words I heard come from that confused woman at Charlotte started coming from the mouth of my 10-month-old in his sleep. I tried to tell a few people. I went to a doctor in another town. He said it was baby noises and I shouldn't tell anyone else. Hollis always behaved differently. He fixated on objects. He wouldn't hear you. And in his sleep, occasionally, I would hear him say those words. So I wrote them down, word for word. I asked him about it, but he didn't know. He didn't know. And one night when he was about 4 years old, it got really windy outside. And there was a sound like a really large windmill. And Hollis set his gaze on the window. And he wouldn't respond. So I read the muttering to him. And his eyes closed, and he looked up at the ceiling. And he didn't move. And his lips moved with mine. And a few moments after I stopped, he opened his eyes and went back to playing. I tried it again a few days later, but nothing. So I figured there must be something out there on those nights, telling him something that no one can hear. Radio was pretty new, and that's what I thought it was. Or something from the occult.
The teens listen intently.
And then when he was 9, I got the feeling that something was out there again. And that night, in the middle of the night, he walked out the front door of this house and vanished.
Faye glances toward Everett.
How?
He was taken up from this earth. There were no other houses. It was very dry. I followed his footprints out the front door, out to about 150 feet, and they stopped there in the dirt. And he wasn't there. They took my son, and no one has ever believed me.
Was there an investigation?
Of course. The whole thing turned to an investigation of me. People were convinced. My son had ruined my life, so I killed him.
So, did you recognize the sound we played on the radio tonight?
No. But I believe I know what is going on.
Can you tell me what that is?
I believe they're up there tonight, right now. And I think there are some reasons to support that idea.
Like what?
I think they stay away from big cities. I think they wait for people to get together in one place like tonight. And when everyone gets out of that game, they're going to be gone. I think they like people alone. And I think they talk to people with some kind of advanced radio in their sleep.
All right, like you think they did with your son.
I didn't just think this up. I think at the lowest level, they send people on errands. They play with people's minds. They sway people to do things and think certain ways so that we stay in conflict, focused on ourselves. So that we're always cleaning house or losing weight or dressing up for other people. I think they get inside our heads and make us do destructive things like drink and overeat. I've seen good people go bad and smart people go mad. I think at the highest level, they do things that cause nations to go to war. Things that make no sense. And I think no one knows they're being affected. We all work out other reasons to justify our actions. But free will is impossible with them up there.
Frowning, Mabel nods faintly.
I've had an entire life to think about this. Years alone. And that's what I think.
Everett gazes back at her with a sympathetic expression.
Well, I'm sorry about everything that's happened in your life to lead you to these ideas.
Thank you.
Like I said in the beginning, we don't want to offend you, but we do have to kind of get going.
I know. But I did have a request for you.
Of course.
I want you to take me with you.
Take you with us?
Yes, right now.
So, where do you want us to take you?
To the ship. I want to see my son. I know he's here tonight. Up there. And I want you to take me to the ship.
The old woman wears a pleading look. Everett glances down, then turns to Faye.
Faye, let's go.
Now. Wait.
The teens stand, and he turns off the recorder. Mabel glances over her shoulder, then holds up the piece of paper.
Take this.
Everett hesitates.
Say this when you encounter people tonight.
Faye glances between them. Mabel stares at Everett unflinchingly. Ignoring the paper, he picks up his tape recorder. Faye follows him through the house. Still holding the paper, Mabel sits with her head bowed. The teens go outside.
We've gotta find a camera or something. My friend Gretchen's dad has one.
Faye, I don't think there's really anything up there. Not like she's talking about.
Everett.
What?
I forgot about Evelyn Maddie.
Wait, Faye, what?
She runs down the sidewalk. Everett gets in the car and drives. He looks out the window and shakes his head. On foot, Faye arrives home. She searches the rooms of the house until she finds a baby in a crib.
Ethel! Ethel!
It's okay. Sissy's got you. Come on, let's go. It's gonna be okay.
She picks her up.
We're okay. Let's go.
She takes Maddie outside. In the car, Everett speeds down the street. Arriving at a house, they burst through the front door. A teen girl wears a nightgown.
Gretchen! Gretchen, I'm gonna need your dad's camera!
What's going on? Is everything okay?
No, I don't know.
Why
are we listening to the radio at all?
Who's at the switchboard?
No one, I left.
Why are you out of breath?
Something's going on. Might be an emergency. I need the camera.
You're gonna get me in trouble.
Have you heard from Ethel? She's not home. She was babysitting Maddie and then
I know. I haven't seen her.
Well, I called her and the line got cut, so...
Faye! Damon!
Who's that?
It's Everett.
Everett, the radio boy?
Yes. Stop smiling.
What's he doing here?
He's helping me. Stop smiling.
Goddamn, Faye!
What are you doing inside? I'm in my nightgown.
I'm not looking, Gretchen, and I don't care what you look like in your nightgown.
Faye takes Maddie from Gretchen.
Okay, let's go.
Whoa, you can't bring her.
You can't take the camera. Go ask my dad at the game.
Gretchen, there is no time. This is an emergency.
What is? What's going on?
There's something in the sky. Stay in the house.
We don't know that. You can't go telling people that. You're going to start a panic.
Everett's at the game, and she sure can't call anybody. So stop telling her what to do and go find the couple from Cold Canyon.
All right, no sweat. Why do you have your sister?
Because
Because Ethel's not there. She was supposed to be babysitting.
Well, where is she?
I don't know.
Is that camera gonna work?
Yes, I can make it work. I've used it before. Think the radio's still down?
Oh, there's no telling.
In the car, Everett and Faye speed down the street. They arrive outside the switchboard office, and Faye carries her sister inside. She plugs a cord into a jack and makes a call.
Ethel!
Hey, do you have Maddie?
Yes, where were you?
Gabe came by and said that
you were
down.
Gabe, what were you thinking?
We were on his roof down the street. There's something in the sky. Have you seen it?
Gerald and Bertsy drive up.
No, what'd you see?
Get in! It's outside of town! Come on! Faye, come on!
Everett gets in their car.
Come on!
Get in!
Stay inside the house!
Faye, come on!
Ethel said Gabe came over and they got on the roof and saw something in the sky!
Who saw what?
My cousin, Ethel, she was babysitting, said they got up on the roof, they saw something in the sky.
What did it look like?
They all look nervously at Faye. She shakes her head.
She said it was round. Hiding in the clouds.
In the passenger seat, Bertie wears a frightened look. Gerald watches the road.
What did you find out from the old woman?
She said they're out there.
Everett gazes out the window.
There's people in the sky. And they have advanced radio and communication. And they take people up.
For real? That's what she said?
Exactly. Matter of fact, she read us this thing.
He rewinds the tape recorder. He presses play.
I nursed him. He was asleep in my arms.
He keeps rewinding. Faye looks nervous as he plays the tape.
When I was little, so I lived.
Everett keeps rewinding, then presses play.
I'm back here.
The tape reels spin as they all listen. Faye spots Birdsey tilting up her head. Headlights of oncoming cars flash past. Gerald stops staring and cranes back his head. In the front seat, the couple sits stock still with their faces turned upward.
Stop the tape!
Gerald? Hey!
Everett reaches for the steering wheel. Glimpses show blackness as Gerald and Bertie regain consciousness.
Gerald!
I want to help me! Okay, honey, hold on! Now, let me out now, please!
Gerald pulls over and Faye gets out. She runs into the woods with Maddie.
I'm so sorry.
Leave! Leaving the couple on the road, Everett follows her. The pretty teen sprints deeper into the dark woods. He runs after her with his tape recorder and a flashlight. Faye stops and gets on her knees. Everett catches up.
I'm right here, Faye. I'm right here.
He sets down the recorder and puts his hands on her shoulders. He puts a consoling hand on Maddie's head, then picks up his flashlight. Everett takes a few steps in front of Faye and directs the beam of light at a patch of dark earth covered in leaves. Squatting, he picks up a burnt twig.
What is it?
It's burnt.
Everett lifts his gaze. He stands and goes to a tree.
Trees are burnt, too.
Smoke rises from its blackened trunk. The bespectacled teen kneels to inspect a singed tree nearby. Everett turns. He and Faye walk to a nearby grove of trees. Moonlight illuminates leafless branches around a circular clearing. The pair discovers a perfectly round opening at the top of the canopy. They stare at the unnatural opening. Faye clings to Maddie.
They're here. They're really here.
Stars twinkle in the sky above the clearing. An overhead view shows the broken branches at the edge of the opening. Everett and Faye turn and run through the woods. He sprints with the tape recorder and flashlight in hand, then runs ahead and glances back. Faye lugs Maddie as she struggles to keep up. Exiting the forest, the trio enters a brush area clear of trees. Their feet pound the dusty ground. They stop and take a breath. Everett leans on his tape recorder. Faye glances back at the tree line.
Do you think they're in the forest?
I don't know.
He turns his gaze to the woods. His expression growing determined, he stands upright. Everett starts walking toward the trees. He stops and turns back to Faye and Maddie. Something catches Everett's eye, and he stares into the darkness. A circular vehicle hovers nearby. Dim blue lights glow along its sloped curvature. Everett rushes to Faye's side, and they both stare open-mouthed at the disc-shaped object. The craft rotates slowly, remaining several yards away. Along the underbelly, lights flicker on, illuminating more of the flying saucer. Something overhead blocks the moon, casting the people in shadow. They look up. The underside of a gigantic ship passes into view. Circular rows of light glow on its metallic surface. The ship completely fills the sky. A circle of green lights shines at the center of its vast circumference. Staring upward, Everett drops his tape recorder on the ground. Spinning as it rises, the smaller craft flies up to the ship. The complex array of lights reveals the textured layout of the mothership's underbelly. Illuminated in the pale green light, the humans stare at the two spacecrafts. The sky view shows the colossal vessel above the flying saucer, minuscule in comparison. The moon glows above. A close view shows Faye gazing up in awe. Everett stares. In the sky, the flying saucer rises up into a port beneath the mothership and vanishes inside. On the ground, the wind picks up around the humans. Faye falls into Everett's arms, and he hugs her tightly. Cut to black. At Cayuga High School. Dozens of spectators pour out of the gym and casually head to their cars. Downtown, a few curious people find McKean's stolen car outside the switchboard office. A boy goes to the open driver's side door and looks inside. Inside the office, Faye's headset sits before the abandoned switchboard. At the radio station, the neon letters glow beneath the radio tower. Inside the control room, a light comes on. More lights switch on, revealing the audio equipment sitting alone. Cut to black. In the desert, a low view follows footprints on the dusty ground. High winds buffet the sparse shrubbery. The tracks end at Everett's tape recorder, lying in a pile of dirt. The blowing wind covers the device with more earth. Cut to black. Credits appear over a black and white view of twinkling stars. The Scandalion Television Hour. Paradox Theater. A title, The Vast of Night. Teleplay by James Montague and Craig W. Sanger. Produced by Adam Dietrich, Melissa Kirkendall, James Montague. Executive producer, Eric Williams. Executive producers, Caleb Henry, Marcus Ross. Director of photography, Miguel I. Litton-Menz. Production designer, Adam Dietrich. Edited by Junius Tully. Visual effects producer, Marcelo Garcia. Visual effects supervisor, Rodrigo Tomaso. Casting by Tony Cobb, Brock, and Sally Allen. Sound design, Johnny Marshall and David Rosenblatt. Original score by Eric Alexander and Jared Bulmer. Sierra McCormick. Jake Horowitz. Bruce Davis. Gail Kronauer. Credits roll. Cast. Sierra McCormick as Faye Crocker. Jake Horowitz as Everett Sloan. Gail Kronauer as Mabel Blanche. Bruce Davis as Billy. Shan Barton as Bertsy. Mark Bannock as Gerald. Gregory Payton as Benny Wade. Adam Dietrich as Rodkey Oliver. Mallory Roddick as Susan Oliver. Molly Milligan as Marjorie Seward. Ingrid Fies as Gretchen Hankins. Brandon Stewart as Sam. Kirk Griffith as Lon Stemmons. Nika McKenna as Daisy Oliver. Brett Brock as Fred Seward. Pam Doherty as Mrs. McBroom. Lynn Blackburn as Ruth Reynolds. Richard Jackson as Spears. James Mayberry as Rennie. Pam Doherty as Winifred. Pam Doherty as Jane Greer. Nicolette Doak as Josephine. Grant James as Arlo. Libby Villari as Grace. Gordon Fox as Pruitt. John Ginling as Cabbage. Brianna Beasley as Ethel. L.A. Young as Benson. Unit Production Manager, Melissa Kirkendall. First Assistant Director, Jeff Weiss. Second Assistant Director, Brandy Price. Art Director, Jonathan Ruddick. Property Master, Elliot Gilbert II. Production Sound Mixer, Eric Dumig. Gaffer, Rob McGreevy. Key Grip, Richard Porter. Makeup Department Head, Judith Statz. Hair Department Head, Janet Talent Dixon. Location Manager, Robin L. Powell. Visual effects by Owner VFX. Music, Kaika Ina Sholio. Traditional composition, performed by A. Costas. Allegrius, traditional composition, performed by Lanina de los Pianes. Tecudo Tecudiesa, traditional composition, performed by Savelli Welovich. Gato Cordobes, traditional composition, performed by Andres Chazarreta. Rocket, written and performed by Colton Turner. Norma Jean, written and performed by Colton Turner. Midnight Hour, written and performed by Colton Turner. Don't Forget, written and performed by Colton Turner. Neptune, composed by Gustav Holst. Performed by Eric Alexander and Jared Ballmer. Whodunit, composed and performed by Albert Marlowe. The events, characters, firms, and entities depicted in this motion picture are fictitious, and any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Copyright 2019 Vast of Night, LLC. All rights reserved. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Amazon Studios. For more information about motion picture access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. Amazon Studios.